It is Saturday, August 2nd, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Well, it's Saturday, August 2nd. 2014. Oh, no, I said that already. Welcome to Geek Speak, you guys. It's been an interesting morning. We're bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity today, as we do every week on Geek Speak. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the studio is Lyle Troxell, a photographer, programmer, and newly puppied.
Hello, I am newly puppied. This
Hello.
Is true.
Yeah. Can I ask you a little bit about your puppy?
Yes.
Is that too personal?
No, not at all. Please
It seems
do.
Like it's related because of the name of the puppy.
We did name our puppy Higgs boson.
Yeah.
Which he's kind of the dog particle
there
at this point
go.
In our house.
Yeah, all very right. good.
Yeah, it's geeky enough. I approve.
That was amazing. Well, there's a lot of happening that we can just you and me to talk about it, Lyle.
Yeah, so. That's a good thing.
That's good.
Yeah.
We can cover this. Shall we start with Comcast finally getting its act together?
Yeah, you know, we rag on Comcast a lot because I think... I, for one, am kind of stuck with them as the internet service provider of choice because they have the high speeds, but
right.
I just can't stand the
but,
company.
Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh.
Nobody loves them.
And, you know,
sorry, Comcast.
We've been talking about these wonderful places where you can get high-speed internet like the rest of the civilized planet.
Right, yeah. Everywhere else.
There's a lot of places where the government is actually providing internet and or at least making more friendly, faster speeds.
Yeah.
And so the U.S.'s speed increase on internet usage is actually lags behind many other countries, especially in Europe. And so it's kind of frustrating to see. At the same time, we have pretty good coverage. Like most of the citizens in the U.S. can actually get access speed, assuming they have got the financial willpower to do so.
Yeah, it just takes money.
Yeah, exactly. So Comcast, and I mean, there's the big ones. There's quite a few big ones. And Comcast currently is trying to do a big merger. And we've been talking about that with the other big one. And they will be massive at that point, right?
Yeah.
Time Warner. And so we have these stories about them being kind of nasty and bad customer service and the like, and we're being trapped. And the thing that gets me about these massive mergers is that they will be less competition, and therefore they'll be less likely to increase the speeds. The standing point from Comcast and those other large companies is, oh, no, we focus on increasing the speeds. We're doing that all the time. But if you look at the amount of speed increase, you don't see it changing,
yeah.
right? So they're not very good at it.
I've got my where the heck are they talking about face on.
Yeah, exactly. What? Except that they are... increasing their speeds quite rapidly, as are other companies in a certain area. And
those who pay?
Yeah. Well, no. It's like I'm willing to pay a little bit more for higher speed.
Yeah.
I have the financial resources to do so.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks. But as long as my dog doesn't chew everything in my house.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the new
so,
puppy.
So you might have heard that Kansas City had made a deal with Google to bring Google internet fiber.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that a few
months
ago.
And so what's happened is amazingly good fiber to home is happening in Kansas City, and Google is doing this project in other places. So guess where Comcast and Verizon are announcing higher speeds at the same rate?
Right around
Kansas City. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So competition breeds action.
Amazing.
That's what I'm hearing.
The thing that's so frustrating is that right there, that they're announcing that they're increasing their speeds. Basically, they're offering 150 megabits where their max before was 105, and they're increasing that for customers. Everybody's getting a jump at that ratio and keeping the same price.
Okay.
Right. So it's not even like, oh, well, we saw competition, so we invested more, and therefore we had to, charge you more for the higher.
They just had to turn the dial.
They just have to turn a dial just to have a competition more successful. And they're not the only ones doing it. AT&T has made an agreement pending with a service provider to do fiber in Kansas City as well. So we're seeing, because there is competition, all of a sudden these companies that have been lagging are increasing their speeds, which basically is a nail in the coffin in my mind to saying, no, you can't become a monopoly. I'm sorry. You need the competition to get the speeds to the consumers.
Yeah, they just shot themselves in the foot that way.
Yeah.
I wonder what the rents are like in Kansas City.
it is a growing desire to be there because of this high speed. And we're talking pretty amazing speeds.
Yeah.
And because everyone's investing there as the early adopters you know, Google's going in there and then all these other companies are going to do it. Yeah. The prices are going to fall. So fast network in Kansas City is going to be a breeze. I could see a good sci-fi movie about Kansas City being the hub of the U.S. relatively soon just because of internets.
We could redo Blade Runner, but with Kansas City rather than China stuff.
You know, I was having a conversation with a colleague of mine, and he mentioned that that he sees a future in which the delay of buffering. You know, if you ever watch a streaming video, you know that when you start it, there's a little time to get the content rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's happening there is enough of the video is being downloaded based off of your network speed. Also, it finds out how fast your speed is and degrades the quality of the video to match so that you can actually watch it within a few minutes.
Right.
So, but that speed of buffering right there, every time you see that, think, oh, network cable companies and big ISPs of that nature should not become larger because they need competition. Because that delay is not a technical delay. It's only a commercial delay. It's only because these companies have not invested enough in speeding it up. If you got high speed, you know, fiber internet, whatever, you wouldn't see a delay. You'd start a video and it would happen immediately.
Well, that's what I thought I was getting when I switched over to something that said it was going to be higher speed.
Yeah, they're marketing to you badly. I mean, they're successfully marketing to you,
they did a pretty good job. I bought right in.
So and buffering now, video is only a side effect of commercialism, that's for sure.
Okay, right. Everyone be upset, everybody. Oh, I shake my tiny fist. Let's talk politics a little bit.
Love
Obama.
It.
Says, screw you, partisan gridlock. Yeah. And he actually signed that phone unlocking bill.
Yeah, so you know that right now, do you have a contract with the company that you have your phone with?
Sure.
Maybe?
Yes.
Yeah. The way cell phones, high-quality cell phones are about $600, right? The iPhone and the Nexus 5 and stuff.
Yeah.
They're expensive.
Yeah.
And the way that everyday people buy these things is they sign
up for a phone contract. Right. That's how I get my phone.
Right. They take their blood and they pour it into his. It feels like a bit of a making a deal with the devil.
Yeah, it does a little bit.
And normally these contracts are about 2 years long. And the whole concept there is that because the company is offering this contract with you, they're subsidizing the cost of the phone, and it kind of makes sense that you're kind of paying off your phone for a period of time. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, okay.
And people, you know, have talked about if they cancel their service, of course, there's a fee to pay. Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happens, though, if you do have a phone and you've got a subsidized phone, the provider of the phone normally locks the phone to only work with that carrier.
Right.
And that locking mechanism is encrypted, and it's done relatively well. Mm-hmm. You can actually get around with the jailbreaks and things, but to do it legally, you kind of had to get the company that made the lock to unlock it.
Hey, can we just go over very briefly the difference between unlocking something and jailbreaking something?
Yes. How will I do this metaphorically?
Yeah, let me just spring that on you.
Yeah, sure, sure. Well, when you unlock the phone, you're kind of telling the phone, all I want to do here is allow a different carrier to be used. Uh-huh. That's the only unlock we're really talking about.
Okay.
And potentially installing other software. When you're jailbreaking a phone, what you're doing is you're intersecting the operating system at a root level and you're modifying it. And then from there on out, you're running a different operating system.
Okay.
So jailbreaking is a kind of catastrophic change to the system. And an unlocking is really just changing a rule. I think that's the best way to describe
it. Okay, so Obama unlocks, we jailbreak.
So actually, quite a while ago, there was kind of this a really interesting thing came out of the Library of Congress that said, yeah, you can unlock your phones. And why the Library of Congress would deal with that is because they actually manage copyright. They're kind of a big voice in copyright. Mm. And the issue at hand was really about the Digital Rights Millennium Copyright Act, which basically said, one of the things it said in there is that you can't intersect and break encryption. That would be illegal. And that was for protecting copyrighted material. That was the idea behind it.
Yeah.
So the issue was that if you had a phone that was locked by a certain carrier, but you own the phone, you were done with your 2-year contract, you own this thing, it was illegal for you to actually get software that would crack it, that would allow you to use it on a different carrier, because that mechanism had to break the encryption on the phone. You had to figure it out. And the Millennium Copyright Act stopped you from doing that. Mm-hmm. But Congress said, wait a second, you own this, so no, that's not true. And so there's been this kind of understanding that it's legal to unlock your phone. It's always kind of been legal to, and therefore jailbreaking your phone was kind of legal in this weird, ambiguous way.
So kind of a AT&T, bad term for it, really.
Yeah, it really kind of was a, So AT&T provided this service for you. So if you were out of contract with your phone, you could actually go to AT&T. I think you can still do it and say, I'd like to unlock my phone. And after like 6 months or something ridiculous, yeah. they finally allow you to do this process in which you unlock it. And then you can travel to Europe with it and you can use it on other systems without AT&T being involved.
Right.
So AT&T has been doing it for a while and other companies have been doing it for a while. But it really wasn't a codified law. Until this happened, until Obama signed this this law.
So this law, what, gives some structure for how unlocking and when unlocking can happen?
Yeah, it kind of bypasses the need to break the DMCA, the Digital Rights Millennium Copyright Act, I think that's what it's called, by just saying, hey, any provider that does a lock on these phones, you must, after a certain period of time, unlock the phone if the customer offers it. So it's basically saying this service has to be implanted in the system, which is actually probably a better way of going about it.
Yeah.
So that you will have at your phone company ability to just unlock it versus having to find a geek to crack it or something. Right.
And
it's
so
it's improvement.
Would that be a similar sort of structure for, you have to have an FM transmitter in every phone, but it's, you know, you can choose to turn it on or not?
Yeah, it's the same kind of law, the idea of the law behind it, right, is that you say you just mandate this rule.
Okay.
I think the FM thing is probably not as close to being signed by any means.
No. We talked about that.
I haven't even followed the story to find out if it's gone anywhere else.
Tune in later, you guys.
Yeah, we'll find out.
All right. Well, speaking of the difference between unlocking and jailbreaking, some Georgia Tech researchers have been doing a bit of jailbreaking.
Yeah. So iOS 7 has been kind of powerful and strong in its ability to resist tampering. And that's actually part of the entire phone system. The way that you jailbreak a phone, now this is a complete intersection in controlling the operating system, you know, taking over to root level. Kind of like if you have your computer and you go get a Linux disk and you install it in your computer and then you run from the disk and install a new operating system, you have completely changed your computer, right? From Microsoft to Linux or whatever. So in the world of phones, that's called jailbreaking.
Okay.
And its reason is mostly because the phone comes with an operating system already on it and there's no tools provided by the companies to do this.
Right.
So to actually intersect your code into to a system, there's lots of different ways to do it. It gets kind of complicated. The hardware in iOS devices is actually really good at protecting the encryption mechanisms. iOS 7, so normally what occurs is some vulnerability in the operating system is found. This means some programmer made a mistake at some point, and there's a way to run your own code inside their application. And that's a buffer run overflow is one of the terms that's used that has to do with memory space allocation. Mm-hmm. But in general, it's an ability for someone that's not supposed to run to be able to run. Do you use an iOS phone or you're a Microsoft phone?
I got a Microsoft, some Windows, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's tiles and things. I don't know.
And do you have a store for getting applications on that phone?
In theory. I mean, it looks like you're allowed to buy these five apps and nothing else in the world of apps is available to you.
They say the ecosystem for that is not very good. That's how they talk about it.
Yeah, it's an unkind environment.
Yeah, but those sanctioned apps are provided by Microsoft or by your carrier.
Right.
And those things are vetted to make sure they're not doing anything nasty.
Oh.
And so to get an application to run on your phone, you have to go through those gate holders. Apple's iOS store is one of those. You have to submit the app to the store for them to get installed on your phone. Mm-hmm. So to get your phone to install other apps that they don't control, you kind of are stuck unless you're able to jailbreak the phone, and that means basically taking it over.
Okay, yeah.
So what you have to do that, yeah. Are you good with it so far?
Yeah. Okay, I had a question about, so is that why a lot of people go for Android? Because there's just a lot more apps available there.
Yeah.
They seem to have a more generous policy about them or something.
I think there's more apps on the iPhone store, iOS store.
Okay.
Yeah, much more apps there. But Android has a more friendly ecosystem. No one has to gate it. You can actually on the Android operating system, in the settings, you can say, yeah, let me install stuff from untrusted sources. So it's kind of like the main feature.
Pal, that's your deal.
Good luck. And they say that. They actually say that. Warning.
Yeah.
But the point is that in that ecosystem, the Android ecosystem, somebody can install stuff that's not vetted by Google, right? They could do it themselves, anything they want. They could have their phone do other things. So needing to jailbreak your phone in the Android environments is not as necessary. In the iOS environment, if you want to install an app that Apple doesn't approve of, and Apple, you know, for example, provides no apps for sexual explicit stuff. Like they're really restrictive on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And some people are interested in having those kind of apps. So in any case, in that ecosystem, you have to jailbreak and you have to find this vulnerability. And this paper that just came out about Georgia Tech team finding a break, they found a way to exploit the operating system without massive changing it, just to take over this feature and be able to install new things, which is kind of cool because I don't think it had been done in 7.1.2, which is the newest version of the operating system. Yeah. So it's kind of good news.
That's interesting. So hacking has gone academic. That's what I'm hearing.
It's always been academic. A lot of hacking happens in school because you have time and you're interested in problems and there's lots of people
doing it in your dorm room is different from being in an academic activity.
I don't think it's that different. I was in academia a long time, and I think that the hardcore stuff happened in lab, in classroom, with professors helping. It's interesting problems.
That is interesting. Yeah. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP, where we are broadcasting concerts from the Cabrillo Festival of Contemporary Music. For those of you who are not in the Santa Cruz listening area, it's a big-time, big-deal festival in the Santa Cruz area. Crack musicians come from all over the place specifically to chew on the especially challenging stuff, and they went through some of that stuff last night. It was their opening night concert. So what's going to happen on the 7th Avenue Project is those of you who have been out of the area will get a little taste for what we've been listening to. Host Robert Pauly is going to talk to Bela Fleck and Dylan Mattingly, two of the featured composers at this year's Cabrillo Festival of Contemporary Music. Banjo maestro Bela Fleck talks about tackling his first big orchestral composition, opening night jitters, meeting his idol, Earl Scruggs, and more. And then Dylan Mattingly discusses the emotional power of music, the human dream of perfection. What a dream. And updating music of ancient Greece. So lots going on the next 7th Avenue Project, Sunday at noon on 88.9 KUSP. That is recommended tune-in listening.
And I have to say that if you are in the Santa Cruz area, you can go to Santa Cruz today on Church Street. And there's a whole festival happening on the street with food and music celebration and stage performance and more music.
And at talk and meet the composers.
Absolutely.
So you can hear more from them directly about the music they're composing.
I love Santa Cruz.
It's a good place to be. Come visit, you guys. All right. Well, you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, and with me in the air room is...
Lyle Troxell. Hi.
Hooray. Hello. So there's something that I read up a little bit on Boing Boing, and it exploded my brain. And I want to ask you about it a little bit. There's cookies, right? We know about cookies. Where you can get tracked.
Not the tasty ones, but the browser ones.
The browser cookies. And, you know, some years back, people were like, oh, we're all savvy to the cookies. No, thank you, block the cookies.
Yes.
And then, you know, as we've been using the internet more and more, advertisers are keener and keener on targetedly marketing their stuff.
Yes.
So I can check out something on ModCloth, and, you know, days later, I can be hanging out on Facebook, and there's the pair of shoes I was looking at on ModCloth in one of their little side advertising boxes.
Yeah.
It's a little creepy.
Additionally, we've been have a lot more dependency on being logged into services, like always being logged into Amazon or Facebook or your Gmail or your email in general. And being able to be always logged in means that there's a cookie happening. That's what it does. So there's a benefit to them as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So on Boing Boing, I was reading an extensive article, which we're going to link to at geekspeak.org, by Glenn Fleischman. And he was talking about a recent paper that's come out from some researchers, both at, I think, at Princeton and in Belgium, where they're looking at how people have worked around this cookie problem by reseeding cookies, creating something called ever cookies.
Yeah.
And the way that happens and the way stuff is drawn into those little boxes on the side of Facebook and other sites is idiosyncratic enough that using how those things are drawn into your web page, they can track who was viewing that web page and follow them from site to site to site to site to site.
Yeah.
So can, what?
Well, there's a bit here to chew. There's a bit here to chew, but it's a really interesting technical challenge. There's no your computer doesn't say I am unique. I'm a unique flower.
I'm a special snowflake.
Right. In fact, the only thing that really says you're unique is an IP address. But sometimes you're actually when you access the internet, you're actually under many IP addresses, so you actually aren't unique. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to a site and say I'm Bonnie. Then they say, well, what's your password? And then you give them the password. And after that, they say, okay, hold on to this unique number. Mm-hmm. Every time you visit me, give me that number back, and then I'll know who you are.
Yeah.
That's what a cookie is.
And your computer takes care of all that for you.
Yes.
Everybody's talking to each other. You don't have to worry
about it. But those cookies are only locked to you and the one website you visited. So if you visit Google, you have cookies from Google.
Yeah.
If you go to a different site, Geekspeak can't see your Google cookies. You don't give them to them. So it's a handshaking mechanism that is very specific to one site. But if you go to Amazon and on the side there's an advertiser and the advertiser is advertising.com, And then you go to Facebook, and the advertisers also advertise on .com. The communication for those ads, you are the same person on both those sites, so you're tied together. That's the creepy thing. Mm-hmm. So what we have an ability to do is tell the browser, don't accept cookies from third parties. And that's the real trick there that breaks that ability. So now you go to Amazon, and advertiser.com is trying to load content, and you say, hey, browser, don't set that cookie, ignore it. Mm-hmm. And now when you go back to Facebook and Amazon.com, I mean, and advertiser.com comes up again, somebody that owns advertiser.com is very happy right now.
Yeah.
I should be using example.com, which is a fake non-working thing.
Is it? That's good.
That's the official domain name you're supposed to use when talk about fake one, example.com.
It's the 555-5555.
It is. Example.com. Yeah. So, well, example.com, advertiser, sends you and gives you information from Facebook. Well, you wouldn't be telling them you're the same person. So they can't correlate you. They don't know that you visited these two sites.
Well, somebody
if
knows.
You turn off the cookies.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then the question is, well, if we're not going to use cookies, is there a way to uniquely identify you without using cookies, some mechanism? And that's what this story is all about. Mm-hmm. How can you get a unique number or unique ID or a fingerprint is the term they're using.
Okay.
Of a person. Well, you are using a Lenovo ThinkPad laptop right now.
Yes, I am.
And you're probably using Chrome because you listen to GeekSpeak.
Yes.
Okay. So those two mechanisms, all the people... So if you visit websites, currently you're grouped into that group. All the people that do Lenovo ThinkPads that have Chrome, you look the same.
Okay.
There's no unique identifier.
Right.
It's just a big group of people.
I've been operating with the comfort that that's how it really works.
Right. Except that you also are... You're also saying in your browser saying... I like English. That's one of the things. Okay, so now all the language differentiations are grouped. Now the group gets smaller.
Yeah.
Now there's only, I don't know, 50 million people that look like you at this point, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So now let's see if there's other uniquenesses that can happen. Well, you have a slightly different version of the operating system potentially than some. So now it's, let's say, 2 million people that look like you.
Yeah.
Now the trouble is, how do we, get deeper? And there's this trick that has been talked about really looking at the hardware on your computer. Now, a browser can't actually look at the hardware, meaning the graphics card, the speed of the hard drive, all these qualities about your computer that could be unique if we had computer software running on your computer,
mm-hmm.
but the browser doesn't have access to those things.
Okay.
But those things affect the way the performance of the computer operates.
Okay. So my understanding from this article is that something is tracking how those advertisements are populated when I browse.
That's part of it.
And so, that idiosyncraticness.
Yeah. So you can imagine.
Narrows me further down.
Yeah. You can imagine that your browser is going to, when you visit one site versus the other site, you're going to do different type of transaction with them.
Yeah.
They might have two ads. They might have different scripts embedded in their ads. So the idea is that if you've never visited their site, you're going to look different than if you have visited their site because some things are cached, so therefore you wouldn't ask for them.
Mm-hmm.
You also, when you ask for that ad versus another ad, tells about how fast the page loads. But there's another magic trick that's out in the wild. It's been talked about since 2012, and that is uses this HTML element called the canvas tag. And
yeah, what is that?
Okay, so the canvas tag is a way of programmatically drawing on your computer. Normally when you see images on your computer, you're actually seeing an actual image file. There's a JPEG or a GIF or some other image file format that's on a mm-hmm. server. You've asked for that, it comes back, and you render it. And they're not very smart. The canvas tag is an HTML5 element, so it's a relatively new element with the length of HTML.
Yeah, part of this is happening because all that drawing now happens not at a server, but in the cloud.
Well, on your machine.
On your machine.
Yeah,
itself.
So in Canvas, what you can actually tell your computer to do some pretty complicated things. Like, here's a canvas tag, and what I want you to render in there is some HTML, some text of this color and this color and this color with opacity like this, rotate it in this form, do all of these mathematical stuff on the canvas tag. This is potentially OpenGL.
You get more like a recipe, and then your computer just follows the recipe.
You're running a program inside that tag.
Okay.
The reason that's interesting is that to do these graphics problems, to render this content, which, by the way, you never actually see the content. It's hidden from you in this trick they're using. But it takes certain computers certain different timings to do these different things. So if I ask your computer, I want you to do these 15 things to this graphics and paint them on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ask my computer to do the same thing, the way that the rendering will happen and the speed that with the rendering happen will be different. Different enough to be unique.
So that's like if that's you ask Monet to paint it, it would look one way. And if you ask Van Gogh to paint it, it would look a different
exactly.
way.
I wouldn't say your computer has any kind of skill of that nature.
Yeah.
But what it does...
Not to flatter my Lenovo.
Yes, exactly. It is a nice computer, I have to say.
Thank you.
If I were to go non-Apple, I'd probably go there. In any case, the way the computer operates and does it can be a fingerprint of some sort. It is not unique, but it is more custom. So now let's say that 2 million people that look like you, mm-hmm. now it's only 1,000 people that look like you. Mm-hmm. That's close enough to start getting an assessment of if it's you or not, because there's other qualities as well. But in case that's the idea behind this mechanism, the thing that's interesting about this paper is that, sure enough, out of 100,000 sites, some number actually have these, some 2% or something like that, mm-hmm. have this mechanism going on. And we don't have tools that allow us to disable that at this point.
Right, that we haven't figured out a way to work around the kind of fine-tuned tracking that happens about this stuff.
Yeah.
And the reason it's important is because...
Well, if you want privacy.
If you want privacy, and the reason why advertisers might be interested, and it sounds like a lot of the 2% of machines that are doing this are populated by ad this, mm-hmm. ADD this, of... Mm-hmm. So what's going on there?
Yeah. Well, they're just one of the large advertising companies, yeah. and they happen to have this exploit, this tool for themselves, if uh-huh. you want to call it a tool.
Yeah.
They already have it running.
They already have it running, right. and they're running it on purpose.
Yes.
It's not just something that's accidentally happening because of how weirdly stitched together the interwebs are.
That's right. It's happening because they intentionally thought, hey, we can help uniquely identify these people.
Yeah.
The other thing of note here is that if you don't have to deal with cookies and you can uniquely fingerprint people without cookies, that's what they're talking about here. It doesn't have to be served by one company. It can serve by many companies, and they can collude and pass this information to each other. And they can basically effectively give you a permanent cookie that you can't even control.
Then this is the ever cookie.
Well, an ever cookie is actually a cookie that has no expiration, but most browsers, you can actually disable those if you'd like. Mm. But what they can do is they could make that cookie for you, track you for a while, you delete it, then maybe you turn on your cookies later, they still know the fingerprint of you, then they reset it again. So it's kind of a cat and mouse
game.
It's
like a battle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, as a web developer who knows cookies are really important, when years ago people were saying, turn off cookies, disable cookies, I always kind of roll up my eyes like, come on, don't do that.
Yeah.
But as a person that kind of likes some privacy in their life, I can see that it would be nice to be able to be a little more private. I think that when
one way to do that might be get off your computer.
Get off your computer is a good one. It's really a good one. If you want to be really conscious of it, you can use the Tor network. You can use VPN services. Yeah. You can spend a lot of time and energy making sure you're private. You probably will fail a little bit and people will know who you are, unfortunately.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh, you're the sort of person who does that.
Maybe.
You're in a small band of people.
But privacy is really important to us.
It is. And I wonder, I mean, it's important to you and me. We're kind of, you know, we're older than some other folks who are coming up in the world who may not have the same concern about privacy.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
And I wonder if that's ever going to push back, frankly, that generational pendulum is going to swing back toward the privacy way.
You know, I've played a lot in my internet life, especially, you know, being kind of a public figure on GeekSpeak, about being more public about what's going on. You know, I think I've talked about what town I have lived in before on the air. You know, I play with that area quite a bit. But then again, I also have children. And so then it becomes a much more sensitive issue, right?
Right, because you're
making
decisions, their privacy.
Yeah, I'm making decisions about their entire life by making, you know, their name known on the radio or something like that. So it is, I definitely have gotten more tame with my, oh, you can know anything about me.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
And your poor puppy now has very little privacy.
That's right.
I made
everyone knows
your
who
puppy.
Higgs is. It's a Shar Pei Lab pit bull mix, by the way. Very cute.
It's half
In
head.
Fact, I think right now, adorable. If you actually go to my website, which is my name, lyle.troxel.com, you could probably see a picture of him because that's how non-private I actually am.
We might even post a picture on the mosaic.
Who knows what the
show.
Heck.
Who
that
knows?
Sounds good.
All right. All right. So thank you for explaining that to me because I read that article a few times, and you can too once you go to geekspeak.org after the show and chew on it yourself.
It is pretty meaty, I have to say.
Meaty.
This is the Glenn Fleischman's whole story on the tricky new tracking methodology.
It does a good job of kind of laying it out, but it takes me paying attention to track all the terms and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what we're here for,
that's
right? Trying to explain this technical garble.
Hey, speaking of bad things, bad USB? Do you want to talk about
bad
that?
Bad USB?
Yeah, there's an exploit.
You know, I hadn't read anything about that.
We don't know anything about it.
No, I actually wanted to talk about more privacy issues.
Oh, okay.
A little bit higher up.
What do you got?
Well, Google privacy.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about this. They saved somebody or something.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing about privacy, right? Privacy.
Don't be evil. They're taking a little too far.
privacy and secrecy are really two different things, right? I want to always remind people of that. Being secret and being private are not the same thing. What any human being does in the bathroom is private, but it's not a secret.
Yeah, everyone kind of knows how the body works.
Yeah, so everyone knows what's going on, but it's still private. So privacy is not
everybody
about...
Everybody poops.
Exactly, that's a good book, by the way.
You are a father. Keep going.
So,
please proceed.
But so we always have concerns about whether these services that we trust are looking at us and investigating us. And mm-hmm. they have privacy rules and regulations. Google's one of them. They offer this free email service called Gmail. Have you ever heard of it?
I use it, in fact.
Okay, I do too. And in the rules of Gmail, the what you sign off to when you don't read that thing and say yes, they can look in your email. Now, not human beings, but they can scan your email.
Their algorithms can.
Yeah, and the reason they'd want to do that is they might get the gist of what's going on in your email and then give you an ad. So if you're talking about camping, they show a camp stove in the advertising. Yeah. That's actually how they make money from the service.
Right.
So all of us are kind of like, well, I like Gmail. It's free, quote, free.
Well, just don't click on any of the ads. No
right.
problem.
Yeah, just ignore that. And slowly over time, Google will know more and more about me, but it's okay. They won't be evil.
Yeah.
Well,
they also
have an ability to scan content and image content. They can actually algorithmically look at image content.
Oh.
And recently, this pretty interesting story emerged about a man being arrested because, first off, his privacy was intruded upon.
Okay.
To some degree. But what he was doing was he was emailing child abuse photographs, pornographic and child abuse photographs, through his Gmail account. How the actual system discovered that these images were that nature mm-hmm. is questionable, and whether the request from a police officer to get content from this person's Gmail account, which is probably more likely than them actually scanning it,
yeah.
it's a little unclear in these early articles. Google hasn't made an announcement yet about it.
Okay.
But basically, this guy was sending images of children being abused through Gmail. And so it's really easy to get those images out of Gmail. Gmail doesn't delete
yeah.
anything, right? So.
Right.
The court actually finally got these images out of the account, and he's
Dude,
highly prosecuted. Yeah. No, it's still, I don't know.
Okay.
No, I'm glad. No, please.
Don't
people
ever
are doing
Snapchat
this. Please keep being stupid.
Yeah.
Please keep being stupid. There's this whole idea that people that deal with images of child abuse and, you know, enjoy that kind of thing and mm-hmm. do that kind of thing, that they're really secretive and really good at it and they encrypt everything. They use the highest level of protocols. No, but they're just human beings.
They're just people.
And they're just doing stuff. Sometimes really stupid,
yeah.
like sending images through email. What's fascinating is that it's quite possible, actually, that these images were flagged by a computer algorithm. And the thing is, making the decision that, hey, maybe this is a 90% chance of this being inappropriate material, let's look at it, is a really interesting problem.
That is, because it implies that someone wrote something in an algorithm that says, flag sketchy material.
Yeah. Now,
that's an intent to be less, to intrude on privacy.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, it's not that complicated to find, hey, this image has a lot of skin tone, and this image has a picture of a kid's face. But that there does not denote any problems,
no,
right? I mean,
no.
That's not an issue. So this space is a tricky one because of the privacy concerns mm-hmm. and the Big Brother-esque aspect of it. And like 80% of the people I know use Gmail as their email provider, and their stuff is being scanned all the time. It's fine as long as the bad guys are only getting captured. That's not a good space to live in. It's really tricky. And I only talk about it because it's something that we don't address very well in our society. We don't really think about how these free services are inspecting our lives. And most of the time it's algorithms and we seem to make it, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, for
but
some
really,
reason it doesn't bother else. Me when they're just ceding the information to advertisers because I can choose to participate in the invitation to click on a link or not.
Right.
But when it's about, and you know, it's having it be about child abuse, that's a whole other wrinkle.
Right. Then all of a sudden you're like, oh, it's fine. I want kids to be safe.
Yeah, good, good, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But that's a dangerous place to be in.
Yeah.
You know, in any case. I know it's kind of sad. You know, I promise you, I'll tell you an interesting story about what a new Amazon service in just a second.
Okay,
I really will.
Yeah,
it'll be fun and enjoyable.
Bon. Give me a little sweet something. Oh, that was heavy. Well, let's do it in a minute.
Okay.
I need to recover.
All right.
All right. I feel better. I recovered.
Okay, good.
And one way that I cheered myself up was looking at these pictures of researchers practicing life on Mars, but doing it from a Hawaiian volcano.
Yes.
It's very cool. So there's, you know, you got your astronaut suits on and you've got your sort of
desolate
looking landscape. And that's what's going on is a team of researchers have simulated sort of a Mars habitat on a Hawaiian volcano. They've been hanging out there for about 4 months now. They were just now returning to Earth, coming out of the dome. And there's some great pictures of them kind of like, woo, hanging out in their suits. And really all they would do is when they went outside, they'd put on the suits, and the rest of the time they were in this enclosed dome to see, like, okay.
But the dome wasn't like... It wasn't like life. What was that giant project that was
Biodome?
Biodome 2.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It wasn't
you
like
can
that.
See,
it was just
like on pillars or something, and there's like a little bit of air.
Right, everything. But the idea was just to kind of mock this environment, this mm-hmm. situation where you'd have to. Okay, so how are they doing with it?
They seem like they survived. They hadn't seen a tree. They hadn't smelled the rain. There was no bird. And you know what I mean, it's like on the Hawaiian volcanoes, just nothing but lava rock that's cooled down. You know. So they're happy to be out of there. It was a long duration mission on Mars, and apparently nobody died of the crazy or anything. So that's great.
They did how long did they do it?
Reddit interview.
How long did they do it?
4 months.
That's a pretty long time.
That's not too bad, right?
Yeah.
Although it'd take a bit longer, for travel time. They should account for that too, I think, getting to Mars and back. They should have had some sort of like isolation on the way thing.
Right.
Anyway, we'll link to the Boing Boing wrap-up of it. As you may know, Lyle, Boing Boing is my sole source for tech news of any kind.
Well, we've had the editor-in-chief on the show a couple times now. So
there we go.
Fern Felder I like a lot.
He's a good egg. So, there's a bunch of links there where you can explore more. There's more images. There's their Reddit, Ask Me Anything. They had a Twitter and a Facebook going, which I guess we'll be able to do once we're on Mars. I guess that's what that's about. I don't know.
Yeah, just a little bit of a delay, but not that badly.
So check it out. It's like straight out of original Star Trek. You know, they're like hanging out in the landscapes in there.
Well, since you're talking about Star Trek, I could totally talk about what Amazon's new service is because it's kind of Star Trek-y.
Okay. Yeah, this is what you were mentioning before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You know about 3D printers.
I do. I do. I'm aware of them.
Please describe to me what you think they are. I'd love to know.
They're like smart hot glue gun machines. You can give them a design, and they'll they have like a spool of plastic or something, and they use it to kind of print out, attaching layer upon layer of this plastic that they heat up into various shapes.
Yeah,
and you can use that to build components of something more complicated and put it together, these sort of 3D printed parts, or you could just make some wholesale.
And just like a normal printer, you run it from your computer and it spits out the material. On a normal printer, it's just putting ink onto a page.
Yeah.
On this new stuff, instead of ink, it's thick stuff, like hot glue is a good analogy because people yell use hot glue. Yeah. As one layer dries, it then does another layer and they're slightly different, and so you mm-hmm. get a 3D structure.
Yeah.
Shapeways is this great service that's been around for a long time that offers a feature where you can take a 3D drawn tool, piece, a 3D model,
okay.
Send it to them and have them print it in different forms. And they'll use their 3D printers in their house and then in their shop and then mail this object back to you.
What do you mean print it in different forms?
Meaning they have plastics and metals and a whole bunch of different materials you can actually get this stuff printed in. They have different qualities.
Yeah.
So Amazon's releasing that service as well. And the reason why it's kind of a big deal is that everybody uses Amazon, or I should say a lot of people use Amazon. Mm-hmm. So now Amazon has this whole 3D printing service. They have a whole bunch of objects that are already available on their store that you can order. Things like dolls and jewelry, phone cases are really common.
Oh.
Parts, uh-huh. things,
replacement
nifties.
Parts, right? That's why we think we'd like 3D printers to be in everyone's home. It's like, oh, the thing broke, and you go, push the button, and you get a new one.
Yeah, our doorknob broke in our hallway. My daughter was trapped in the bathroom for about 20 minutes.
Hold on, let me print this out.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I finally was able to pull apart the doorknob, get it all open and stuff. It completely failed. And yes, it was a very small part that I actually needed. Yeah. But instead of doing that, I went and got a different doorknob. Because that's the kind of world we live in, unfortunately. I don't have a 3D printer. Right. So if only I could have sat on my computer, modeled out the component I needed. 4 hours later, sent it off to Amazon and waited 2 days, then my door would be totally fine.
Sure.
In any case, the service is exciting because it's the infancy of this kind of thing, right? But basically, right now from Amazon, you can go purchase 3D printed materials. The thing that's interesting, of course, is that relatively quickly, there'll be more products. In fact, if you're a maker, if you're a designer of objects, you can put your objects up there. You will not have to do shipping at all, just your thoughts. They will then print those things in different materials and
send
mail
a little residual or something.
Yeah, and if you want to play in that space or interested in this place, go do take a look at Shapeways. They're one of the companies that does that right now.
So is it because Amazon has entered the picture that, oh, now it's on? It's like the Kansas City competition for high-speed internet.
I would say it's a bit of that. Yeah, it's hitting mainstream.
Uh-huh.
I think we had some stories a while ago that some Xerox offices or what's the company that Xerox
IBM?
No, I'm sorry, not Xerox. Oh. So it's a copy company, big copy company. that's everywhere. It's part of FedEx.
Kinko's.
Kinko's actually has the service in some of their stores as well.
Yeah. Or the library.
And the library does?
Well, a lot of libraries are taking on 3D printing.
Okay, I got to say 3D printing is pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. So it's handy for Amazon because then instead of storing a bunch of stuff, they go, oh, you want one of those? Brrrr, print it out and then send it off to you. Low overhead.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, is the big expense of buying stuff on Amazon for Amazon itself. The thing they're streamlining, the reason why they're so successful is they warehouse things in different areas. In fact, they algorithmically warehouse things. So a new product hits the stores. It's being shipped, being purchased. It's similar to other products of the same type. Therefore, they could predict what areas will buy these, and they'll mail before people even start ordering them. They'll mail them to the warehouses based off of that algorithmic predictions, and therefore, that's why normally you can get stuff the next day. Uh-huh. It's because it's actually already shipped from where it was manufactured to a warehouse near you.
In preparation for you remembering that that's something you wanted. They already knew you wanted it.
Yes.
And then
We covered a story a while ago where someone was ordering diapers regularly, right? They're ordering diapers, and every day, it took about 3 days for them to get the diaper, 3 days to get it. All of a sudden, one day, it just came the next day.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, from there on out, whenever they order diapers, it's the next day. And the reason is the system figured out that there's a person ordering diapers, and they got it all ready for them.
Yeah.
And all they had to do was push a button and it went.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and they were even experimenting with sending people stuff that they were pretty sure they wanted before they even asked for
it. That's kind of what they were doing, right? They just weren't doing that last leg. Well, in any case, you can imagine these warehouses that are all over locally. Amazon has these large warehouses. They open 3D printing facilities in those warehouses. Now, when you actually order something, they don't warehouse it at all. They just warehouse the bare material. Then they print the object directly, locally to you, and mail it out the next day.
So there's going to be 3D printed diapers. That's interesting.
I
hope not. How flexible, low fee, and how absorbent.
And we make them out of diapers.
Yeah, just send us those diapers back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
You asked about the bad USB.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to talk about that, but...
Are you now?
I'm ready to talk about that.
Because what do you mean? How does a USB be evil?
What USB type things do you do on your computer? Do you use USB devices at all?
I do. I plug in my external hard drive with a USB.
Mm-hmm.
Repower up my MP3 player with a USB.
Your phone probably as well, right?
My phone, yeah. Sometimes I do some get the files off of here and give them to somebody else.
Ever put stick on a mouse to your computer through USB or a keyboard?
No.
Okay. So I do that sometimes. When I'm at work, I'll plug in a keyboard so that my laptop kind of sits somewhere else and the keyboard's a little larger and has a number pad and stuff.
Yeah.
I'll plug in a keyboard. The point is that all of these things you just listed, including webcams and speakers and microphones, these are all USB protocols that are part of that spec. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's interesting is that when you plug in a USB device, the physical act of plugging in is telling your computer, you can use this as any of these things potentially.
Uh-huh.
You plug in a keyboard, the protocol says, I'm a keyboard, here are some commands. With your keys on your keyboard, though you might not be able to do it because you have to use a touchpad as well, there's key commands to do almost anything on your computer. You can start running applications. You can write full programs just by typing.
Right.
So if given enough time just by typing on your computer, I could get a computer I could write a program that would copy all your contents and ship it out to somebody in a zip file. That would be something I could do just using the keyboard.
Okay. Normally, what you'd have to do is manipulate your fingers and consciously want to do that.
Yeah, the way you do it, right, exactly. You'd actually just type.
Yeah.
But typing is just the protocol of the keyboard USB interface. So if I take a keyboard and I remove the keyboard aspect and instead I put a program that says, I'm a keyboard, use these keys, then it looks to the computer like a keyboard, but it really is a program.
It's just a dongle.
It's just a way to get ready to load a program into your computer.
Yeah.
So it is quite easy to take advantage of the USB stick or the USB keyboard or the USB anything and do stuff with it.
Hey, spies, pay attention to this story.
Spies know this.
They already know this.
There's actually devices you can buy that do these things.
Yeah.
For a while, I was always just concerned about key loggers, the idea that somebody would intercept all your key commands for keyboard, but that's the simple things. What's interesting about the USB or about the USB protocol is that you can easily infect a computer with a USB protocol because of this loophole.
All you have to do is be present.
That's right.
And to plug the thing
in. So when someone says, here, take these files from my memory stick, do not plug that into your computer. Unless you trust them explicitly, because you're basically saying, yes, take control of my computer. No problems here.
Okay.
That is the danger of the bad USB. And this whole story from ours about this really talks about you have to think about your USB. In fact, everything you do on your computer, you should think about risk assessment. You assess whether it's likely or dangerous or whatever to be targeted. Recently, I wanted to share
about they should have little USB raincoats. Always use a raincoat, gentlemen.
Unfortunately, you can't do that.
I guess you
could actually buy a USB device that would act like that, that wouldn't take any commands.
That's your next million. Condom metaphor protecting your computer from
We'll go to lunch
USB
afterwards.
Devices.
We'll talk about exactly what that's going to be.
Okay.
The name of it's the most important piece, and we don't have to do anything else. So I was hanging out with Miles a while ago after the show, and I wanted to give him a video file that I had on my thumb drive, and I plugged it into his computer, and he pulled it out immediately. And I was like, "God, Perry, what?"
Yeah.
He's like, "Sorry, I can't have things like that on my computer. It's not my concern; it's my employment concern. Like this machine can't. There's protocols for that.
It's a work machine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so now I started thinking about that differently. So I think one of the reasons why Miles passed us off the story is like, this is what I'm talking about. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
So if you're a high target person or just paranoid, don't let people plug in USB devices in your computer.
Have some sort of junk computer.
Yeah.
And then everything's fine. You can transfer it over.
Or just email it through Google, Gmail, the files you want. And then they'll scan them for you.
Google Docs?
All you have to do is trust them.
The Dropbox?
And we all trust them, right?
Right. Google's great. Hey, let's talk about a little classism, shall we? So there's your Mercedes.
Yes.
That's fancy. Then there's your soda can. That's more kind of the people. So can you tell me about having a soda can affect what the Mercedes can do?
What the Mercedes car can do?
Yeah.
No.
No. All right. Well, just
but let's go off to your. I was kind
I'm
of
skipping around on you.
I know you are. Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm actually kind of.
I see things that I'm interested in, and I want to know.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody's interested in high class cars, right?
Yeah. And making them do your bidding. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, the thing about the article about the Coke can, the C-Class car, is it's just a video of someone using a soda can to control their vehicle. I'll leave it at that. It's a Google video. We'll have it up on
Geekspeak. It'll be a geek bit.
Yeah, it'll be a geek bit. You got to go see it. And after the show, Bonnie, you and I will go see it as well. Does that sound like a plan?
Good. Yeah. All right.
Good.
So there's like a little enticing, what are they talking about?
I know.
It's totally fine. Looking at the video won't infect your computer.
No.
Don't worry about it.
Won't.
It'll be at geekspeak.org after the show.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I did want to say that I get emailed stories from people all the time about like, this is amazing. Check it out. Because they've heard me on the show and they want to know my opinion and stuff.
Yeah.
NASA has this new impossible engine that could change space travel forever. This article, which people have been blasting me with.
Oh, really? Have you been getting that from several sources, not just me?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, what? Is this for real?
It looks really impressive. And after researching it for about, I didn't put enough time in it, about a half an hour, I can't determine if it's real or not.
Okay.
So I can't make an opinion about it. But yeah, new space travel stuff is cool. I'm not
so
optimistic on changing
to be,
physics.
Like a quantum engine. Basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
Is to
that
be a quantum engine.
It's, you know, oh, it works. And how does it work? It's a quantum. And that's just not good enough
Science.
For me to say, yay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't get too excited about that
we
story.
More
I'm
proof.
So sorry.
Yeah.
More a little proof. Bit, a little bit more.
So proof. If you've been hearing about some sort of quantum engine and are getting all excited for your Star Trek type travels,
slow down.
Don't
launch yourself to space. I mean, there's things that are exciting for us about space travel is that we have a commercial spaceport now being developed. Like, that's kind of neat.
Yeah. So we'll be able to like go there ourselves and go, could you just launch this for me?
Exactly.
See if it works.
Exactly. Well, every week we do pull together stories for the week of the Geek News. If you're interested in adding to our knowledge or want us to cover a certain topic, please feel free to let us know. We're actually geeks at geekspeak.org. We read all the email that comes in. You're welcome to email anytime. If you're interested in any more of the stories we talk about, how do we get people to know about that stuff?
Well, our recommendation is that you go to geekspeak.org. And what we do after the show is we populate that website with the day's show. And on that show page are a little descriptor and links to all the stories that we talked about during the show. So after the show, you'll be able to go to geekspeak.org, find the show for today, August 2nd, and then do your own research, which we always recommend anyway.
And just a hint on the Mercedes car hack thing. Mercedes actually has some self-correcting and autonomous features, but
a lot of cars do.
Yes,
right.
But it requires you to have your hands on the wheel to do that because it's going to do like auto acceleration, deceleration. But if you pull your hands off the wheels, it's going to slow down and stop. It's like that's not a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So the soda can hack thing is basically just telling your car by taping a soda can to it that your hand's still touching it, so that it thinks everything's cool and it keeps driving for you, meaning it keeps the acceleration on.
And do you just need one can, or do you need you two just cans need one. At the 2 and the 10 on
no,
the
no,
steering?
You don't. It's not getting that difficult yet.
How does it
yet.
Tell?
Well, it's just it effectively the sensors in the vehicle can detect that it's your hand. And by taping a soda can, the sensors still think it's your hand. That's all. It's not that big a deal.
That computer's dumb.
But if you've got a Mercedes and you have that kind of money and you want to trick
experiment
it,
that way
you can
with
do it
your,
with a soda can. Congratulations, everybody.
Okay. All right, that sounded more interesting than it actually was.
Exactly.
But nonetheless, kind of, we'll have a link to it.
Yeah, it's fun to hack vehicles, I think. It's the point of hand, yeah.
All right. So, let's see. Oh, hey, guys. Here's a bit of good news if you're freaked out about getting spied on. Lots of, law enforcement, they get a wiretap or something so they can monitor your calls. And as you may realize, nobody's calling anybody anymore.
It's all texting, baby.
It's all your Aunt Mildred or whatever calling you. So because everyone's IMing and chatting, we currently have no way, or law enforcement currently has no way, to properly sort of monitor those things and track the information being shared there. I imagine people have figured this out quite a while ago. Those who are interested in not being spied on have probably moved to IM and chat a long time ago.
Yeah, definitely tapping. You can do that through phone companies, but of course people are using different types of tapping services or different types of text services all the time.
Yeah.
And the only way cops can really do it is to give ask a question of a big service provider or a big company, and it's a little tricky.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. So congratulations. I guess that's where you want to post your child abuse photos.
Oh,
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission in GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geek say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit GeekSpeak.org. Thanks for being here. I'm Bonnie Jean Primpf with Lyle Troxell, and this is the August 2nd, 2014 episode of GeekSpeak. Thanks for listening.